You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and hold on to your eardrums and your matcha lattes because we are blowing the whistle on wellness right here, right now. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am over the moon excited about today's sponsor. Friend, this is my dream sponsor. The, oh my God, is this real life sponsor? The sponsor I've been dreaming about since I was a little girl, winning card-giving holidays with her reliable tearjerkers, ending fights with soul-spilling letters left on people's pillows, and surviving college by avoiding all test-taking classes and taking only essay-writing ones. No, this sponsor is not a pen or a computer or those yellow Papermate SharpWriter number 2 mechanical pencils that you turn the tip of, which I've used religiously for 2 decades. This sponsor is the thing I've been writing up to my whole life. It's my book. My first freaking real life will live in stores if stores ever open up again, but can live on your shelf right this second book. Party in Your Plants, which has been called in an Amazon review as the best plant-based book ever, as well as a cookbook that's way more than a cookbook, and a plant party heaven. Readers have also said that it's the best healthy living guide for your kitchen that you must purchase pronto. And so I'm here to tell you that you can promptly purchase Party in Your Plants, 100 plus plant-based recipes and problem-solving strategies to help you eat healthier without hating your life, anywhere books are safely and sanitarily sold. Partyinyourplants.com will take you to all the major retailers, or you can just hop your fingers over to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Target, or Walmart to buy yourself and your best friend and their best friend a copy today. That's partyinyourplants.com to grab a copy or 19 of my book that Amazon readers say you must add to your cookbook stack ASAP because it gets all the thumbs ups. My guest today is a familiar one if you already listened to episode 132, because she was also the guest of that one, meaning she's a repeat guest. And I feel like there was a quicker and easier and less wordy way to say that, but whatever. Here we are at the end of the longest run-on sentence I've said yet today. My dear friend, Robin Conley Downs, is a speaker, educator, entrepreneur, podcaster, and new author of The Feel Good Effect, Reclaim Your Wellness by Creating Small Shifts That Create Big Change. Holding a master's degree in education with an emphasis on behavioral change and 4 years of public policy and health change at the doctoral level, smarty pants, her work taps into cutting-edge science around psychology, neuroscience, mindfulness, and habits. I mean, it's all great to educate and inspire based on personal experience, but it's also great to have solid professional research to back that jazz up. And what I heart most about Robin is not just her willingness to be honest and vulnerable about her stuff, not just her mission to embody and amplify a gentle approach to wellness, but her super nerdy professional research background, which she really draws on to share cutting-edge science and life-tested, radically simple solutions for real wellness. Robin's motto is less striving, more ease. And my instruction is for you to keep listening. Robin, thank you so much for coming back on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Oh, I'm so grateful that, I'm grateful for our friendship and that this brought us together, but I'm really happy to be back. Thanks for having me.
Oh, we are COVID book launch buddies, and we were just sharing our nightmare stories about what it was like birthing a book in the middle of a pandemic. So we have that now to bond us for the rest of our lives.
It's a special club. No one wants to be in it.
That's true. Well, we're in it. And your book, The Feel Good Effect, came out last month, August.
September.
So that's last month. Today's October 1st.
I know. I find that time does not have the same meaning that it used to. So yeah, I was interviewing someone the other day, like last week, and it was September last week. And I said, okay, your book's coming out in August. And she's like, well, it's actually coming out in October. And I was like, well, what day is it? What month is it? I don't know anymore. So yes, my book came out in beginning of September. So it's been out for a month, which is pretty amazing. I don't know what happened really, but it's been out for a few weeks now.
Woohoo! Well, can you throw us some knowledge about why time is a question mark right now using your neuroscience, psychology, two masters, almost PhD knowledge that you have? Is there any research to explain why time is not time anymore?
You know, there is. And, you know, I certainly couldn't speak to it. I'm sure there's some expert out there that will tell me that this is not exactly right. But I think the basics are that we are anchored to time, into time. I mean, time is a construct. That's a whole nother conversation. Mm. But in general, we are anchored to time by our routines and important events that mark time. And because our routines have been so upended and those things that normally mark the passage of time or the progress of time are missing, we don't have like a mental way to attach to anything. And so the days go by, blurs day, every day is blurs day. And it's like, what month is it? And that's a real thing. It's not just because you're like losing it, you know, and well, I find it so fascinating just how important sort of these routines, traditions are, not just for emotional health, mental health, but also for actually knowing what a day is. So we're in this experiment altogether that we didn't ask to be in. And there's a lot of learnings to come out of
like
it, I think.
The Truman Show.
A little bit, yeah.
That's how it feels. Okay, so your book, The Feel Good Effect, is, let's just say, it's redefining wellness. That was your goal. That was the promise. Talk to me about that. That is a bold statement. I love it. What is your definition of wellness now in this 2020 landscape?
Well, I think what I wanted to do with the book, and obviously when I wrote it, I couldn't have imagined where we would be when it came out. But I wanted this to be an open invitation to you, our listeners, our readers, to redefine and reclaim wellness for you. And so it's less about how I define it and more about how you define it. And I think what's happened is two things with wellness. One, we've not really paused to think about what it means in general. Like, is it an industry? Is it a group of people? Is it what we eat? Is it what we do with our bodies? Like, what is wellness? Mm. And then two, to say, what does it mean to me? Like, what is the purpose of wellness in my life? Is it to achieve a set of external outcomes? Is it to control the shape of my body? Is it to fit into a club like online? Or is it about how I want to feel? And I would, you know, no surprise here, my strong encouragement is to rethink, reclaim, redefine wellness on your terms according to how you want to feel, not necessarily like to fit in your jeans or, you know, whatever it is that we've been conditioned to think wellness is about.
Oh, wow. That just gave me a much needed deep breath. That was beautiful. I mean, these are such poignant, important questions that it's so true. I mean, when I started, like, when did you start your quote unquote wellness brand situation? When did you start yours?
You know, I think it seems so weird to say this, but I think it was almost 7 years ago.
That's my exact timeline also.
Really?
Yeah.
I love it. We're soulmates.
We are. So you know then that wellness was not a term. Like, I mean, wellness was in the dictionary. Like, of course it was a word, but it wasn't like, oh, you're in the wellness industry. You're a wellness blogger. You have a wellness podcast. Like, I had that word. So I used to go by, you know, I'm a health coach, or I'm a, you know, plant-based food blogger, or I have a health website. When did wellness become it? Do you have any idea? Like, give me the history of wellness.
Well, I love this conversation because why aren't we asking these questions more often, right? Like, as a group of people who is involved in something, we should be pretty clear on what it is that we are involved in. And I think part of the issue is that exactly what you said, it kind of crept in and then became this thing that we're involved in either sort of on purpose, intentionally, or just as a bystander.
Yeah.
You know, and there was a couple factors that influenced it. I'm still really thinking about this question because I think it's really important. I think it's important in terms of if we're going to say we're doing wellness, we need to know what that means to us. Like I already said, we need to know why, but also we need to know who that includes and who it excludes. Mm. You know, and in the last few months, that's been pretty high level conversation that we're having. It's like, well, who's in this club and who's excluded from this club and why is that? And I think there's a couple reasons, not to get too nerdy, although I am just so nerdy that it's hard to hide.
I love it.
I think a couple things happened. There's this article, I'll send you the link if you want to put it in the show notes, by this woman named Rachel Robinette, who now does like herbs or something. She has a brand, but she wrote this article a few years ago and it was called something like, I worked in the fashion industry and here is how the fashion industry co-opted the wellness industry and turned it into a luxury good.
Ooh. What's the answer? How did it happen?
What she was saying is that the people in the fashion industry and the people in the beauty industry basically saw a market and created a new market.
You're right. I mean, at first I was thinking, oh, like athleisure. But no, I think what you're saying is like Free People now sells crystals and they sell superfoods and they sell face masks and they sell cookbooks.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
It is. And then also that some of those people that were working in fashion and beauty moved out of that space and became wellness influencers or wellness brands because they saw a market opportunity. And so I think when we say wellness, what industry, what we're talking about is wellness market. Like what can we sell and to whom?
Yes. To promise them that they'll be more well.
Right. And so it's a market, it's a selling of goods and services to people based on this promise of wellness. And that's fine. I mean, we're living in the United States in a market economy. However, is that what wellness is? Mm. And is that what we want it to be, a market where we're getting sold things? Or is that the whole definition? And to me, no.
No, I mean, I've always said that wellness is just how well you are, right? I mean, like
it
the
seems
word
like that should be the answer. But if you look at what's happened, Talia, is like, why did it change so quickly? Because it's a really, really lucrative market. It's a great market to sell into. It's the things that people will buy, and so we've had great success from beauty brands moving into the wellness space. Of fashion brands moving into the wellness space, and then also like media companies moving into the wellness space. And you have to just remember everybody's selling something. So what is the incentive for those people or groups or companies to be in the wellness industry? Like what are they trying to sell? I'm not opposed to that. I'm just because I'm here selling a book. Like I'm not.
Well, a book that empowers one to define wellness according to their own definition.
Right.
Goals.
So I think when you have that, a little bit of a mindset shift or reframe around wellness to think of it as a market, then you can view all of these people and all these companies and all these brands through that lens. Like, what are they trying to sell me? And is that what I want to buy? Either like literally with money or with your time, attention, and energy. And that's up to you. I know it's actually hard to put this on individual humans to say like it's up to you, but you do have a lot of agency, freedom, and power once you kind of reframe it in that way.
It's fantastic that you're saying this. I mean, this is such an important conversation. I just feel that one day I woke up and there was a wellness industry. Like really, I mean, I don't even understand how it happened. It's just like, it just happened so fast. It exploded. And yeah, it's really hard to even define or pinpoint. And I love that your book and your mission is to just help people make it wellness what it is for them and take their power back. It's phenomenal.
And I'll tell you one more quick story.
Yeah.
Well, two. I've been getting asked this a lot because my book was originally rejected at one of the biggest publishers because the editor in chief felt like it was anti-wellness.
Ooh, that's pretty cool to be able to say. I mean, that's badass.
And at that point, I was like, wow, this is how far we have to go, right? That a book about reclaiming and redefining wellness on your terms, making it about feeling good, using the science on how our brain works and really simple habit strategies to make your life joyful and sustainable, that's anti-wellness. So what does that say about the industry, right? So I've been thinking a lot about it.
I just got the chills.
Yeah, it's so wild to me.
What?
I just have to laugh about it. And then it's not funny, though, because the consequences are major. And then I went back to my, I did a public health master's. Public health is about health promotion. Mm-hmm. So you do the work to promote health. And then you look at that compared to the wellness industry and you think, how much about this is promoting health? Mm. And that's just a good question to ask yourself.
You're like a whistleblower. I love it.
I'm here for it. I did not intend to write this book and then come out and talk about be the anti-wellness person, but I'm here for it. Anyone else that wants to talk to me about this, let's do it. Because the harm, Talia, that it's causing, in particular to women, is devastating and it's not okay. And it shouldn't be on us to change it, but I think it's going to be.
Okay. Talk to me about that harm. What is the harm? Because if people are listening and they're just like, what? I don't see the prob. What's the prob? Talk to me about what the prob is.
Oh gosh, how much time do we have? But let me try to be simple about this. So it actually, a lot of it is kind of in my book, although it's not framed that way because apparently it is an anti-wellness book.
But I love that.
The idea is that I did a lot of research myself and my partner on, you know, why does wellness for me, why was the pursuit of wellness making me feel worse?
Okay. These are big questions. I'm writing it down, taking notes right now.
Well,
just helping me digest.
Good.
Yeah.
So why is the, for me, that was my story. So I was at the time working in my past story, working full-time, 60-hour week, full-time doctoral student, had a baby, wasn't taking care of myself, decided that I needed to start and threw myself into wellness like it was my job. And I had some success. I checked all the boxes. I was a good little wellness person.
What do you mean you threw yourself into wellness? What does that mean? How do you go from not in wellness to thrown in wellness? I don't know. What does that mean?
I love your questions. I love your brain.
Thanks.
It means that I treated it like it was my job and that it was another way to be productive.
But
and
what's
accomplish
it?
Something.
Exercise, eat,
just doing all the things that you're supposed to do if you follow anyone on Instagram. Work out an hour every day. Mm-hmm. Meal prep for at least 3 hours on Sunday. You know,
literally in my book, I say I'm so anti meal prepping. You could call me the anti batch bitch.
And I still actually do some.
You do.
Meal
you do a lot of
planning.
Well, you used to talk about it a lot,
but. It's not.
And I exercise an hour a day. So to some, you know, to each his own.
Well, that's why it's about what you need.
Yes.
And so the problem I found was it's not even the specific things, but those were the examples that I couldn't, working full time, going to school full time, taking care of my family, could not also take on another job, which was working out every day, you know, trying to do all the mindfulness apps.
Your morning routine.
Meal prepping. Meal,
your crystals.
Morning routine.
Your meditations.
Right,
your juices. So everything, so then we're defining started wellnessing as saw what you did on Instagram or Pinterest and was like, okay, I guess this is my checklist of how I take care of myself now. Let me get my supplies. Let me, you know, change my wardrobe. Let me purchase all the ingredients. Let me readjust my schedule. Here we go. Wellness time.
Yep.
Which is just, if you think about it, sorry, you're gonna be all riled up here. It's just absurd. I can't. It's absurd. It's supposed to be a thing that we do to enhance our lives, not become our lives.
Yeah.
Gosh.
Quote.
We should have collaborated on a book.
Beat it out. So I didn't have that perspective, though.
No, that's fair.
I was thinking, I need to take care of myself. This is the way to the outcome of that. Mm. Not thinking about how I was feeling, not thinking about the context of my life, like what really will work.
So what was your outcome? What did you want as the outcome?
I wanted to feel good. That's what I wanted. But the path to get there did not feel good. Mm. And I think I thought, if I can just have enough discipline, willpower, motivation to get there, then it will be good on the other side. Mm. And the thing is that I got some like outward success. Like my body was lighter, my skin cleared up. I did have more energy, but then by the end of the day, I was still so frazzled and exhausted from trying to do it all that I was miserable. And so I finally stopped to ask the question, what about feeling good? Hmm. And that's where I went in deep into the research to kind of understand what was going on with my brain, and that maybe the way I was thinking about it was actually my approach was not working for me. And that's what I found. And then we were able to replicate that initial kind of research with a big study, a big survey study that I did with my partner. And we found that it's very similar for many, many people. The kind of our approach is interlaced with these three things that I call the striving mindset, which is perfection-based thinking, all or nothing thinking, and comparison. And that those are the three things that actually often not only keep people from making long-term success, but my voice just cracked.
Oh, from having long-term,
I am from having long-term success, but also from feeling good along the way.
Yeah, because if you don't feel good along the way, you're not going to feel good, because that stress is worse for you than pesticides, as I always say.
Yeah,
like yeah. Come on now.
And so, like perfection-based thinking, when it comes to wellness, you can see this across the board in the industry and then in our own lives that, you know, I mean, Instagram is sort of the version of perfect wellness, that it needs to look like this and it needs to be done in this exact way. And so in your normal life, if you don't have the perfect green smoothie in the morning and the composed salad bowl for lunch and then the macro dinner, if it's not perfect, then you somehow did it wrong. Totally. And these unrealistic standards and our how hard we are when we make mistakes. That's the perfection part. Mm-hmm. The all or nothing part is so, you know, I don't have to explain that as much usually, because it's this all in, all out, on the wagon, off the wagon approach that we really
love.
There
should be no wagon. Let's burn the wagon.
And then the comparison, right? Letting what you do compared to others stop you, cause pain, cause suffering. And so it's those three things that are really so much of the issue that we're struggling with. The good news is there's a solution, but it's like an uphill battle, Talia, to talk about this, because I know people just wanted me to tell them, like, what diet should I go on?
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I love that you want to think about that. And I'm, you know, I can talk about food too. I have 500 recipes on my website, but it's not about that.
Okay. Pause there. Food is not the thing. Wrote that down, underline. We'll come back to that. I want to say a few things. First, this is reminding me of when I used to make YouTube videos, and I don't go really on YouTube that much anymore, but at the time it was very, very popular to do the like what I eat in a day videos. Right. And I remember people kept asking me to make them. And I never had a desire to do that, because I don't want to film every meal I eat in a day. Like, I like to get on the camera, do my thing and get off, not like lug it around with me all day. But I did it once, and it was a really eye-opening experience, because I was curating. It was like I was curating in a perfect day.
Yeah.
You know, because I wasn't going to show if I like went into the fridge and got like a bite of last night's leftover dessert for a snack. Like, that wouldn't be fun to show, just not because I had shame, but just because like that's awkward. So I made, and also because I knew I was filming it, I was like, ooh, I'm going to make like an extra fun like lunch today, you know, like so. But then that's what people wanted. And those are like my most viewed videos. And those are huge videos, because people don't have their own, they don't exercise their own agency. They don't, I don't know, like, sorry, I'm just rambling. But like, it just makes me so sad that people would rather just watch what other people eat in a day and then say, okay, I will do that too, copy, paste into my life, then learn or embody the ability to make these choices on their own by listening to their own bodies and guts and minds and souls. Yeah.
Well, we think that perfect is the solution, but it's actually the problem. And our brains crave perfection. It's actually hardwired into us, Talia. So it's not, I like to explain to people, like, a lot of this stuff is part of how we're wired, and then it gets amplified by marketing. So it's not like you're somehow bad or we're bad or people are bad that they want to watch those videos, but we do know that people will much prefer to watch the perfect day than like the real day, even though it will make them feel worse and have less success in the long term if they try to do that themselves.
So why are we pre-wired for perfection? Because I'm trying to think how that could have protected us at some point in the past. Isn't that usually why we're wired for things? Because at one point it was actually a good thing. Why was perfection wired into us?
Well, it's really about mistake avoidance. So not making mistakes.
Interesting. Hold on. Okay. Interesting.
That I'm listening to this process.
Right? That like perfection is the opposite of mistakes.
Yeah.
Which like, I guess, but I've never ever thought about it like that.
Well, that's the conclusion I came to after doing all the research. I mean, I'm sure there's other people that might define it differently, but in the research around perfection-based thinking, so it's not about a personality type. It's really about a thought, like the way the brain...
A fear of making mistakes.
So people who have more perfectionist thought patterns, their brain is more perfectionist, actually feel like a physical feeling of pain or shock when they make a mistake.
Wow. Do you feel that way?
I do.
Have
that? Yeah.
Oh, I don't.
Good.
That's why I'm like... I don't have that at all, but I am, why ever people are wired for comparison, hello, that's me, much more so than perfection.
Well, we found that usually people kind of have a dominant, perfection, all or nothing thinking or comparison.
I'm also big all or nothing too.
So if you're...
I'm just not perfect, okay? I make a lot of mistakes.
But see, the thing is that if you're going through life trying to avoid making mistakes, what the consequence of that is less risk-taking, avoiding vulnerability.
Oh my God, that sounds miserable. Yeah, trying to avoid mistakes just sounds like a horrible way to go through life. Impossible.
And that manifests also as sort of impossible standards. Like that you create this standard for yourself of your day and your week and your to-do list and your food that's literally impossible.
Wow.
And then you can't meet it and you feel terrible.
Well, all my empathy for you and anyone who's struggled with this. This sounds really... sucky and challenging. How can one I know this is like a meandering conversation, but how could one start if they're feeling this right now hardcore? What's the first step to start untethering themselves to perfection?
Yeah. Well, and if it's meandering for you too, if you're listening and you're like, I want a book about this. I wrote it. I wrote it for you. And you
well done,
there's
Robin.
There's some graphics in the book, some illustrations that even show sort of the antidote for perfection, all or nothing, thinking, comparison. And there's some practices for you if you want to get started with some really simple ways that you can practice rewiring your brain.
No big deal. Just rewire it.
But you can. I mean, that's easy. So the amazing thing about neuroscience, about what we know is that, and I will answer your question, is that...
That's fine. Keep going.
Neuroplasticity is just a fancy word, but it means that your brain can change. So with practice, you can actually change your thought patterns, which changes your actions, which changes your life. And it's not just woo, manifest your life. It's like,
no, you're using
real
science.
Stuff. So interestingly, when you start practicing these things, you can start to see some effects really quickly. I mean, it takes a long time to completely change the wiring of your brain because you practiced it one way for so long. It's if you think about like a field of snow, like a kind of icy snow, depending on if you've lived in the north, you know, like the icy, icky snow. Imagine you've walked one path for years and years and that ice has been tamped down and really it's like formed. Mm-hmm. What you're trying to do is walk a different direction now and create a new path. So at the beginning... it'll be a little challenging. But over time, you just wear that path and then it's there. And that's the one.
Oh. Wow. That's a great analogy. It's a great visual.
Well, thanks.
Thank yeah. you.
So you want this Dang, new path.
You should do this for a living or something. Write a book on it.
So you want this new path. So for perfection-based thinking, or for everyone, I will say, self-compassion has been shown mm-hmm. to be incredibly effective. Mm. When I teach self-compassion, people usually, especially people with perfection-based thought patterns, are very resistant because they think that showing them self-kindness will make them weak, will make them a quitter.
Mm-hmm. Letting them off the mm-hmm. hook.
That they yeah. won't achieve anything. But what we know is the opposite.
It's for sissies.
Yeah. Mm. Is that treating yourself with kindness actually makes people more persistent, more productive, and more compassionate to others.
There you go. Win-win. Pardon the interruption, but this is a sorry, not sorry situation because my interruption is to tell you about one of my favorite plant products on the planet, Four Sigmatic Mushrooms. I'm already so hooked on their magic mushrooms of many varieties. I love their hot teas that make lion's mane, chaga, reishi, and cordyceps taste great. And I love their lattes like matcha, chai, and golden milk. But I'm here to hopefully get you inspired to try their coffees since they're so much smarter for your body than non-Four Sigmatic coffees. To their organic coffee, they add lion's mane mushrooms, whose claim to fame is supporting our brain, and they add chaga, which is wonderful for our oh-so-cherished immune system. Because you listen to this podcast, thank you so much for that, by the way, you get to save 15% off any and all Four Sigmatic shroomy stuff you'll want by going to their site, foursigmatic.com, and using code PARTYINMYPLANTS. Or you can just type into your little type box, Four, F-O-U-R, Sigmatic, Sigmatic.com/partyinmyplants for the automatic 15% off. Woohoo! So who... Okay, wait. I had this question. I wrote, who are the victims? That just meaning like of the wellness. I guess I'm meandering back. But this whole wellness becoming a thing that people like you in your early days decided, okay, I'm going to do this now. I'm going to be in wellness. Like who do you think are they mostly people who are unwell that are seeking help, or are they easily swayed? Like who are the people that need to hear this and really think, am I being persuaded in an unhealthy way?
Who are the victims? Haven't we reframed victim into something else like survivor? That's a totally different conversation. But I would say that the people who are being negatively impacted by this is all of us. Mm. Because
it's true.
When the pursuit of wellness is about achieving impossible standards or about doing something all in and all out at the extreme ends, or about comparing yourself and then despairing, then we have a problem. Because not only, mm-hmm. I'll say this over and over, not only does that get us long-term outcomes, not just short-term, but also it makes us miserable in the process. And so, you know, I end the book with a marriage vows for my husband, and I set our own vows. And our vows are, I have only one life and it's only so long and I choose to spend it with you. And then I changed it slightly. And for you, I say, you have only one life. It's only so long and I hope you'll spend it feeling good.
And I'm crying. That's beautiful.
So I think when we ask, like, what are the negative consequences of the way the wellness industry is. And I, to be clear, I don't talk about the wellness industry much. There's like one page about the marketing machine in the book, but.
Well, the book's about redefining wellness. So, I mean, it's more about an empowering manifesto for claiming right. it. It's not just shitting right. on it, but in claiming it, you're bringing light to the fact that one has to claim it because, you know, otherwise not yeah. great.
So when wellness becomes about striving, the striving mindset, and mm. when it becomes about getting more done, then we all suffer. But when wellness is about compassion and finding a flexible thinking, finding a middle ground for yourself, and gratitude and embracing like the amazingness of you and your life, and then about kind of getting the things done that matter and not doing the rest. Well, that's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I feel like if someone's listening, they're a little confused. They're like, all right, Talia, this, you've had 200 episodes of this podcast talking about eating plants and exercising and yoga and essential oils and positive thinking and all sorts of stuff. What is wellness then? What, you know, Robin just said food is not the thing. It's not about the food, not about exercising an hour a day, not about meal prepping for 3 hours on Sunday. So like, what is wellness? What should I be doing? I'm confused. What's your answer to that? Like, how do you describe it in your book? Like, what is wellness then? How can one start to live wellnessy?
Wellnessy. Well, I have an exercise in the book about really focusing in on how you want to feel and letting that be a driver. So instead of
that's what my book's about too. Yes. So we should.
I love it. Yeah. Well, that's why we're friends, right? I mean, I can be friends with anyone, but you're a special one. You want to, if you think about how do I want to feel and then why, like, why do I want to feel that way? What does that mean to me? And then that's sort of your North Star.
Okay. So let's, for example, I want to feel more energized so I can think clearer, produce better content and help more people and also show up more fully for my loved ones.
Yeah. Okay. So then you have a why.
That's an example.
You have a feeling and you have a why. So then I have the second section, which we haven't talked as much about, which is the good method, which is these kind of habits, strategies, and routines to stick all these actions to. So what you're saying wellness is actions. So habits, right? Eating well, the kinds of food you eat, the essential oils, the mindfulness, whatever. And what I'm saying is like, you need a structure for that. You need like some routines and you need some systems to make that work. So I know that maybe that didn't make any sense either, but you need.
Well, that just sounds a little rigid to me.
Good. I'm so interesting that you say that. So when you, coming back to this, how do you want to feel? Then I want you to think about, there's a chapter in there in the Good Method about the 80-20 rule. And finding the 20% of your actions that really move the needle in your life, but also are connected to that feel. Mm-hmm. And so when you're asking, like, what do I do? Then I would say, I would really focus maybe on starting with that particular activity, that exercise. It's like, what in my day is moving the needle for me related to how I want to feel and what is really not? And if there are things that really aren't, then being asking yourself, why am I doing this? Do I need to do it?
Boom. So bringing it back to this example, if my driving feeling is energized, then that's why I exercise, because running and lifting weights, but mostly running, gives me so much energy and it gets the blood pumping to my brain and all the hormones, yada, yada, get the fresh air, blah, 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 music bumping. And so that is definitely in my 80. Now, I understand if somebody's feeling is I want to feel calm or grounded, they're probably leaning more on a yoga type of thing. But that's why, as I'm thinking out loud, watching someone that says, oh, my key to success is running every day, they're seeking energy, but you're seeking groundedness. Don't just copy and compare and think that to be perfect, you need to run, because you're seeking two different things.
That's where we disempower comparison, because then we know, good for her, not for me.
Yeah.
And, you know, I will say too, like, for some people, running might make them feel calm and grounded. Like, you know, that's the amazing thing.
That, me too, actually.
Right. So it could be related to a number of things, but that, see, you're on next level here already, Talia, is that you've already sort of made that connection that this action, this habit makes me feel a certain way and that's why I do it. You know, there's a lot of people that still run because they're trying to burn a certain number of calories. Now, that's a totally different reason that's going to get you a different, ultimately have a different feeling in your life. So it's not about like, should you run or shouldn't? It's about how does this make you feel? And so is that one of your, in your 20% of your actions that yield the results in your life?
Okay. I've been living my life based on how I want to feel for the majority of it, because I think I was blessed, cursed with a very sensitive system with my IBS stomach that is very reactive to things, not just foods. As I learned, it was stress, it was environments, it was people, it was everything. So I've learned, you know, at a very young age to live my life based on how things make me feel. And that has been my MO. It's what I've preached forever. It's what I empower people to do. And I get asked a lot, well, how do you start doing that if you don't live that way now? And I just say, well, you have to accept it as fact that you feel things and nothing's arbitrary. And so start tuning in to how you feel. What would your answer to that question be? Because if somebody's listening and they're like, wait, I don't know how running makes me feel. I'm just doing it to burn calories or because I think I should. How do you empower people to start living a life according to how they feel?
I would go back to that exercise, spend a little, the exercise in the book, to be clear.
I know we're getting confused, not right. Like exercising.
I would go back to, you know, obviously you don't have to buy the book. You could just do this without the book of just writing down.
Though you should buy the book.
Definitely buy the book. You don't.
That's buy not, my book too while you're
if
at
that's
it.
Not in your kind of moment here, then I would say write down, just start brainstorming, how do you want to feel? And it's not about perfect. It's just what comes to mind. And then maybe start just writing down some of the actions or habits that you have during the day and noting how related they are to how you want to feel or how not related they are.
I love it. It's a more like cerebral approach. It's a very, it's like putting out on paper. I like that. That's very different than me just being
like,
just
feel. You and I are very different in how we approach things. So that's good. Yes. We kind of balance each other. Because I wanted to go back when you were saying it felt rigid. What about it? What about what I was saying felt rigid?
Well, you said like rituals, which makes me feel like, oh, I have to do something every day. What if I'm not in the mood to do it every day? Like today, I love running more than anything. But today, I had other things I wanted to do this morning. I was writing something that I was really engrossed in. Then I took the dog to get his hair groomed. And then I had to shoot a video. And like, I didn't run today. And if I was like, oh, well, I have my ritual. I have to run today. Then there would come the guilt. And there would come the, oh, you screwed up. Or there would come the, fine, I guess I can't write today because I got to do my ritual of running. And there, I don't like
okay,
that.
Okay, can I say something?
Please.
So what the problem isn't the ritual. The problem is all or nothing thinking. And that's like the best.
Told you I was an all or nothinger.
So it's when you overlay these filters of all or nothing thinking, comparison, perfection on top of things. That's the problem. That is where we have a problem. So it's the same thing, Talia, that happens with like the conversation around self-care or self-love or rituals or routines. Mm-hmm. It's that we start approaching it from a perfectionist place or an all or nothing place or a comparison place. So you could have a ritual or routine of running that did not require that you do it every day.
But when you hear routine, it makes me think like every day.
I'm so glad you said that though, because I think that that's the way a lot of people feel about it. And there's actually no rule that routines have to be done every day.
Huh. But when we hear morning routine, you imply like this is what I do every single morning.
Right. And I invite people to step out of that and to ask themselves, what would it be like if that wasn't what a routine meant?
It's interesting because I always talk about how with eating plants, it's just about your most of the time.
Yes.
Your most that matters most. So it's interesting that that's 1,000% my philosophy with food. But I guess with other things, as we're uncovering right now.
In our therapy session.
In our therapy session.
So
it's interesting.
But it happens with food all the time. So you asked
that's
me, you
a
know,
big thing.
What about food? The reason that I momentarily stepped away from food as my primary part of my business is because my concern is that so much of how food is being presented, again, in the wellness industry is overlaid with perfection, all or nothing, and comparison, that we lose the sort of richness and value of eating well. And you teach that so beautifully, but it's very difficult for people who have been hearing over and over that like, this food is good, this is bad. This diet's going to be inflammatory, this one's, you know, anti-inflammatory. When you start to open up the gray area, it's hard because we've been thinking about it so differently.
Yeah. I mean, the food and gray, there's not much of it.
Not the way we do it. I mean, that's not been true through the history of food.
Oh yeah, I'm just saying within the wellness industry context.
Right. And it sells. I mean, all or nothing thinking in extremes sells really well. So
yeah.
But just because something sells well doesn't mean that that's the right way for us. So I think your approach to food has really been a stepping away from all or nothing and to say, like, what happens if you just eat plants and not crap?
Or more plants than crap.
More plants than crap.
I eat some crap.
Exactly.
Oh, I mean, it's just so liberating. So then your thinking is to, your goal is to help people take that kind of mentality into every aspect of their life.
Yes.
Beautiful. Now, do you feel that everyone should have, or I don't know about should, but it's ideal to think about one feeling that one wants to feel, or can we have a little poopery, a potpourri? I always say poopery. I can't say that word. I was going to say smorgasbord, but I can't not say smorgasburg because I lived in Williamsburg. So these are two words that have been screwed up for me. Anyway, should we have a potpourri, a tasting menu of feelings, or do you think just one is a-okay?
Well, so what I like to do in the book, the exercise, and I'll tell you, so you can do it by yourself if you want, is just you can brainstorm a list of words. And then from that list, it's hard to explain a little bit verbally, but imagine you have a list and then I want you to circle each word and then kind of with spokes or lines. Why do you want to feel that way? Mm. And then I encourage you to pick three. I think three is just a nice number. There's some research around the number three, but it's not too little and it's not too much. And
the three.
And the three that you pick are the ones that have the most lines or spokes.
Oh, what are your three, may I ask?
Yeah, my three are grounded, focused.
You are that. Okay.
And open.
Okay. Oh.
Yeah.
Those words are really perfect for you. I mean, focus, I can tell your mind very focused. You're definitely grounded and you are very open.
Oh, thank you.
You are those three things.
And then I think seasonally, like I like to do this exercise on like seasonally. So as we're coming right now into fall, like, is that still what I want to be focusing on? Is that still how I want to be feeling? Or is there something else that I want to invite in? And so it's really personal, but it's something that can shift. So you're not locked in. But again, those feelings are more about a guiding North Star for your actions. So when you're you're not just going through your day doing things without any intention, it's like, okay, I know I quote unquote should pull out my yoga mat and I don't really feel like it, but I think about like, well, why am I doing this? Oh yeah. So I wanted to feel that way today.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how I feel every time before I run. I have to go to the feeling I'm going to get.
Yes. You know, have you ever interviewed Kelly McGonigal?
No, I haven't, but I've been attracted to her work.
Yeah, she wrote The Joy of Movement.
I think, yeah.
She endorsed my book.
She was on your podcast, yeah. Was she?
She's amazing.
So why don't we all just listen to your episode?
Yeah, I would recommend it. and she talks about the joy gap. Mm. So the joy gap is what before you exercise, you do not feel any joy. In fact, you often feel like you don't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And there's a ramp up when you start doing the workout or the movement where you still don't feel joy. And then you hit the point where you start feeling really good at some point in the workout or at the end. And so she calls that the joy gap. Well, and we just have to like get ourselves over that gap in order to remember, oh yeah, when I do it, I feel this way.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. And so that can apply to all these routines and habits and healthy wellness things.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. That the feeling doesn't often come before, it comes during or after.
Right. That's why I always say that food isn't just like willy-nilly, like affecting how we feel. Like we feel things based on oftentimes what we put in our body. And so we can make healthy choices if we think about how this food's going to make us feel and then pick accordingly.
Yes. Without perfection. Boom. Without perfection.
No like, perfection.
You know, sometimes I want to feel like light and calm and I don't eat in accordance with that. And that's okay too, you know, but overall, this is what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm. more times than not.
Yes.
Beautiful. So what's like the key outside of redefining wellness for oneself and choosing the feelings that they want to use as their guideposts, like what are the different buckets that you're helping people incorporate into their life? Is it like movement, food, mindset, or like there's so much. Where do you suggest people start?
Well, you can learn some of the mindset stuff that I talked about. So the antidote to perfectional or nothing thinking comparison, you can do those practices on their own. So you can start learning that even like not applied to anything. So if that speaks to you, I would say start there. But it really tell you it's less for me, like this system, the approach, the mindset, and then the method, it was really made to be able to apply to anything. So if you want to start with food, or you want to start with movement, or you want to start with mindfulness, or you want to start with productivity, maybe that's the next book, is like applying to all of those things. But I really wanted it to be a roadmap for you to use how you wanted in the area of your life that you were most, you know, wanting to feel good in.
That's great. I love it. You're just it's so chill, so grounded, so focused.
Just for the record, I am not a super chill person. So,
well, you know, we teach what we need.
Yeah. Oh, yes. For sure.
Mm-hmm. So right now, what we need is some help because we're in a pandemic and we're all going crazy. As we started this conversation with, what day is it? What month is it? What year is it? The other day was in another conversation, I kept referring to the wrong year. Like, we don't know what's happening. Is it AM or PM right now? Who knows? It's interesting timing that your book came out a month ago in this climate. How do you feel that wellness has shifted / do you feel that it's more important than ever to take care of ourselves or to lessen the grip of perfection? Do you think perfectionism and all the stuff's on the rise? Like, how do you feel that things have shifted in relation to our current climate as it pertains to wellness?
I think it's more important than ever to step out of the striving mindset of all or nothing thinking, comparison, and perfection, and into the feel-good mindset, because we do not have control of anything, because we don't have, many of us don't have the time or the focus that we used to. I know for myself as a parent, my day is filled with a lot of interruptions, and there's not like blocks of time that I can do these things that I may have used to have.
Are you homeschooling?
Yes. Not by choice.
but by love.
But by love, yes. And my husband's also here. So,
Oh, that's great.
I didn't write it for a pandemic, but I actually think we could just rechange the title to like how to survive a pandemic with your mental health intact, because
it's great.
It's really about doing the less by doing the things that matter and ditching the rest, and then doing it in a way that feels really good. That's less about perfection and more about kindness to yourself, and more about flexibility, and more about gratitude and finding out what works for you. So my hope is that people can find this book in a time now where they need it the most. And, you know, if you can redefine what wellness means to you now, then that's pretty powerful, because we're in a difficult time.
Yeah, it's true. When you say figure out, you know, what matters, you said something about find what matters. I can just hear somebody saying, but I don't know what matters. I'm told that so much matters, you know, like, and that was what the pain point I've been trying to solve with food, where we're told only eat, you know, gluten-free, actually eat whole wheat. No, eat upside down. No, eat standing up. You know, like we're told so much as black and white and so definitive. And we've lost touch of what matters to us. Do you have any advice for how people can start to figure out what matters to them in terms of how they take care of themselves?
So I would go back again to
that. You say how we feel.
Okay.
One more time.
But it's good. I will add to that.
No, it's so good.
But I really, this is true. We're often pretty unaware of what we do every day. So here's a really tactical, actionable strategy. Just start recording kind of your actions, your daily actions for a couple of days. No judgment, just ate this,
curious,
did this, scrolled my phone, watched TV. A log of your day, a couple of days, and then a weekend day. And then I want you to have your feel words, but I also want you to have like some result words. It doesn't have to be a specific goal, but what kinds of results are you looking for in your life? What are you working toward? And if it's nothing, then that's like a whole nother conversation. But let's say you do have some results that you're, you know, a big project or a way, you know, you want to run a marathon or whatever it is. And then I want you to look at how are those actions attached to how you want to feel? And then how are they attached to results? And that's a really good way to start asking yourself what matters, because it's not totally subjective. It can be very clearly attached to things. But if you don't even have in your own mind, like how you want to feel and what outcomes you're or what results you're trying to get in your life, it is really hard to answer that question.
Yes. No, it's true. I mean, I think a lot of people are sometimes just, you know, going through their day, just doing the things without thinking why or for what. So yeah, figure that out first.
Or at least think about it. I mean, you might not get crystal clear on it, but when you start to think about it in those terms, then you start to maybe have a little more agency over your day and to say, I'm not just doing things because that's what I did yesterday.
Yeah. And talk to me about the feel-good fallacy. How do you describe that?
So the feel-good fallacy, it was important for me to note that when we say feel good, it doesn't mean you feel good all the time.
Boom.
And so we're living in a time where like toxic positivity and spiritual bypassing or like feelings gaslighting, whatever term you want to use, the self-help industry really created this weird thing where you're supposed to feel good all the time or think positively all the time. Well, the human brain doesn't work that way. Like, it's not human to always be positive. And so the feel-good fallacy is that you can have a feel-good effect life without feeling good every second. And so that you can create space for, one, sometimes something's just really, like when you're running hard, Talia, my guess is that doesn't always feel good at that moment, but it creates the feel-good effect in your life. So sometimes holding space for things to be really hard and challenging, but also holding space for negative emotions, God forbid that you think a negative thought, but that you counteract.
Good vibes only, Robin.
No, good vibes only. And so I talk a little bit sort of the damage of good vibes only and positive thinking.
No wonder this book is an anti-wellness book.
You know, it's just so funny to me because I never thought of that at all when I was writing. And what I realized is I'm just an outsider because I come from academics. And so I was just writing about what I see and then what I find in the research. I did not intend for that to be so radical.
Well,
it makes me sad that it is.
Well, what does that mean? That coming from research and academics is opposite of what's being presented out there.
A little bit. A little bit of that is true.
No bueno. No bueno at all.
So I would say if you're, you know, if you're only having negative emotions, then you definitely want to make space to see the good in your life as well. And there are some things in the book about that, but also that good vibes only is toxic and that bypassing your feelings and the feelings of others is not like conducive to overall emotional well-being. So we want to create space for both.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, what would the Party in My Plants podcast be without asking you what your current favorite plant is?
I have so many. I have so many. Plants are part of my feel-good effect. They really are.
You and me both.
Do people have like one? I find that I really have.
That's
a hard
why
time.
I said current. Okay. I said current. That was that was giving you some, you know, guidelines.
Well, as we go into fall, I love like doing all the roasted veggies and doing like just a roasted veggie salad or like roasted veggie quinoa salad, roasted sweet potatoes, roasted Brussels sprouts, roasted carrots, butternut squash, all the fall. Things are my favorite.
That sounds fantastic. And you just roast them in your oven?
I do.
Pot oil, salt, pepper.
Pot oil. Mm-hmm. And lately I've been really doing a lot of like the anti-inflammatory thing. I've been really into like just anything I roast, I'll sprinkle on some turmeric, cumin, cinnamon, any kind of like spice that I can add, I'll add it.
Ooh, nice. I mean, they're so medicinal. Might as well. And they taste lovely.
And they taste good.
Boom. And what would you say is your current favorite thing that you do for self-care?
Finding, I have carved out like a 20-minute window for exercise movement in the morning with in the middle of my daughter's routine of getting ready. Like mostly it's me helping her get ready and then getting on her Zoom call for school. Oh, and 20 minutes of movement in the morning is like so good. And I've been really into, it's a Peloton hack. So I have a non-Peloton bike that I like did all these hack things to. And so I can do Peloton without the bike. And I do 20 minutes and I get super sweaty and then I take a shower and I feel so good. And 20 minutes, it's like amazing how much that will change my mood.
Amazing. Yeah. Did you copy what Sarah Adler, our friend, did with her Peloton hack?
Well, interestingly, I think she and I figured that out. No, I don't think anyone copied anyone. I think she and I figured it out at about the same time.
Oh, that's funny. Because she wrote a whole blog post about it.
Yeah, I have a blog post too.
Oh my gosh. That's
and then
so
I
funny.
Think I messaged her and I'm like, hey, I did not, this was not intentional, but like, I don't think it's a surprise though, because she and I, before the pandemic, were both busy moms who worked at home. And then, so this for us, for me and for her, are very like obvious 20 minutes. You can jump on, jump off, help a kid, do whatever you need to do.
Help a kid.
Right. I just, cause I can't like just leave the house right now. So, yeah, shout out to Sarah, Simply Real Health. She's also amazing, and she is a fan as well.
I adore her. Yeah, she's been on the podcast twice, like you.
Yeah, she's so great. And she endorsed my book, too.
I did see that. Yes, that's awesome. Yay. Well, speaking of your book, obvious question, where can everyone go get it? Obviously, anywhere books are sold. Where's your favorite way for people to get it? Where can people stay in touch with you?
So it's everywhere books are sold in the U.S. and Canada. It's coming to the Spanish market soon. It's
ooh, la la.
There are a few on Amazon in the U.K. and Australia right now.
Wow, that's cool. I think I'm just in the U.S. as far as I know.
Well, I sold it into the Spanish market, but I don't even know when it'll be available because they have to translate it. And then into the Russian market.
Ooh.
And then we just sold it in Estonia.
Oh my God, congratulations. That's random and awesome.
I was like, Estonia. Yes.
That's
so if anyone listens in Estonia, it'll be there. My favorite place to get it, I would say, you know, if you can find a local bookstore and support our local bookstore friends, they could really use the help. And if they don't have it, you could kindly ask that they get it. And I'm sure they will. We have Powell's here in Portland, which I love to support as well. And you can order it for that from them. And I think over $25, they'll do free shipping.
Boom. And where should everyone find you?
Oh, right. Okay. At Real Food Whole Life on Instagram and on realfoodwholelife.com on the web.
And your amazing podcast.
Oh, and thanks, Talia. I've done a lot of interviews lately and I feel like I'm losing my focus at the self-promotion part.
I feel
part
like I'm
it.
Losing you right now.
No,
yeah,
the self-promotion part. The Feel Good Effect podcast, anywhere you get your podcasts, you can hit subscribe right now and you can listen to Talia on there. Many of our other kind of mutual friends, we talk about mindset, habits, and routines and then dive into deep into some of the stuff we talked about today.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a really, 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 really good wellness one that is, if you liked this episode, you will love Robin's podcast. Let's just say that. So on that note, Robin, thank you so much. Congratulations on your book. Proud of you, thankful for you being a wellness whistleblower, which might be the title of this episode.
Oh my gosh.
Robin blows the whistle on wellness.
All right, do it.
I really appreciate you, and you're doing such great things for so many people. So thank you.
Oh my gosh, I appreciate you so much. Thanks for those of you who hung until the end. Appreciate you too.
Much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Doot doot, whistle blown. I sincerely hope this episode hits you right where you needed it and resonated with you like a big group hug with Robin and me and you. If you liked this episode, how about you share it with a friend, would you? And for more help taking the hell out of healthy living, check out Robin's super smart book, The Feel Good Effect, and her podcast by the same name, of which I was the guest on episode number 91, in which I spoke about how being healthy and happy don't have to be mutually exclusive. Which they don't have to be. So listen to episode 91 of The Feel Good Effect. And also, have a great day, eat a plant, stay safe, and we'll hang again soon.